Okay, so this morning I was talking about Mono. And Mono, of course, is this platform where every one of you should be developing software with, not only because it's very nice, but because, well, obviously. But no, I was telling somebody yesterday that I felt that evolution was 30% of what it could be, right? And I figured Outlook is also 40% of what it could be. And the problem really is that it's really hard to move that code base. I've been watching the evolution hackers suffer through the pain of adding features to the thing, adding usability features, trying to make big changes, and it's just not happening. It's just too much code, it's just too much C code, and just moving the thing in any direction is very painful. And I expect that any other very large application is going to suffer from the same kind of problems. I'm sure that Nautilus people have the same problem. I'm not sure, but it sounds like big applications have this problem of mobility, and it's hard to prototype things. So when I started using C#, I got the same feeling I got back from my Scheme days, which is it was relatively easy to remodel your application. Even if you had made some decisions, it was relatively easy to reshape the application with C#, which is a nice feeling to get after being stuck in C for a long time. And I'm sure Python has the same features. Just a quick intro, GTK# binds a number of libraries that are available in the GNOME platform, and it's missing a few ones. It does bind ATK, like somebody said a few minutes ago. We haven't tested those. Some of these things have not been tested, and we're still in the phases of polishing up some things as we run into problems in the binding. I have to say, I'm not the author of GTK#. The main authors are Mike Kestner and Rachel Histolo. They're the two hackers behind this. So we're still finding a few little things here and there, and we're polishing the API. They've come up with a nice framework for polishing the API, and I'll probably talk about that. This talk was originally going to be done by Mike, but he couldn't come, so I'm doing it. So we've got the basics: ATK, Pango, GDK, and GTK. Those are fairly complete bindings, and those are the ones. And at least Pango, GDK, and GTK have been banged by a lot of people while writing code, so they're relatively useful. GNOME hasn't been used too much. Glade has been used a lot. LibArt has been barely used, and GTK HTML is also very very much used. GCOM has not only has a direct binding, but it's also a number of helper routines. Some of you might know that I'm not very versed in GCOM. That's one way of putting it. And so I cannot really talk about what the features are in GCOM, but they seem to be awesome, and that's what people tell me. We've got GNOME DB bindings, RSVG, and also Mozilla. So you can use all of these little toys with GTK#, and that's it. That means we don't have Bonobo, we don't have what are the other ones missing? I think I have a list later on. We don't have Orbit. Very good point. And for Orbit, we don't know what we're gonna do. Michael keeps suggesting his ideas, but he's never putting code where his ideas are. What? Yes, we do support glib just because we need to access some functionality in glib, and some of the APIs in GTK and GDK expose glib types. So we do have a wrapper, but that's manually generated. That was custom crafted. What is gobject? I'm kidding, dude. It doesn't matter. Gobject is irrelevant. So, I mean, it's exposed at the very low level, but it doesn't matter. So we do support Windows and Linux, so we ship nice packages that contains GTK# binaries and GTK binaries for Windows, as well as for Linux. Oh, here is the things missing. We don't have bindings for GNOME Print, for Full Canvas, for Bonobo, and there is some early work from Martin, which I saw a few minutes ago here on the Full Canvas, on Dia Canvas. So now we're going to do my live demonstration. So I'm going to show you how to write the... You just check that battery is still on. Yep. Let's see this somewhere else. So, do you see that, or should I use another editor? I think we're going to use something else. You need a bigger font? Oh, crap. Oh, yeah, can we turn off the light? I think it's this one. Oh, perfect. Okay, so, here's a little program. You say using GTK. This is hello world in C#. So I'm gonna do static void main. I don't know why Emacs now is coloring. Never seen this before. So you just do this. Then you do some application run. Then you create a window, GTK window. Actually, I can just say window. New window. Hello, Joe. And then I create a button, maybe a label. Hello. And I'm gonna pack this bad boy here. Very much like your C binding. Well, I guess Python must be similar to this. So I compile this bad boy like this. Oh, and there it is. Very nice. Very nice. What's the what? The what? The exe file?
No.
The what? It's only 9 megs, dude. Wait, there are two processes. I don't know. One is 9 megs and the other one is 2. One must be some kind of threat. Anyways, back to the thing. Now, I'm gonna write my first VB application. I tried this last week, so it must work now. I think you go like this, imports. Oh, so the nice thing about the GTK sharp binding is that the GTK sharp binding is not a C sharp binding. So it's kind of it kind of got the wrong name. It's actually a .NET binding. So that means that any programming language in .NET gets to use this thing. So we're gonna link with exactly the same library, and now we do something like this, and then we do, what else do we do? I think it's module, demo, sub, main, and sub, and module. Let me see if that compiles first. Oh, I called it CS? Oh, VB. VB. Okay, that compiles. And then you do application init. Application run. And then I think we're gonna create a window. It's classy. Hello. Bob. What? Oh. New label. Hello, Joe. Oh, I don't think we need this. W add L. W show all. Am I missing something? Oh crap. Oh, right. You need to reference the assembly. Oh, perfect. Okay. So this is so the idea here is same library used multiple languages. If you came in the morning, you know that we don't have many free compilers ourselves. But what matters is that you can use it from any one of those. There's a number of set of interesting things that we have in the GTK sharp binding. We actually don't expose the binding as it is. We take advantage of a few of the C sharp features. So for example, all of the getter or setter methods that you see in the GTK API, either through GObject, either through using the GObject set and get features, or through the C API, we map those into C sharp properties. And C sharp properties does everybody know what a C sharp property is? Does somebody not know what it is? Oh God. So the rest of you are sleeping? Anyways, so let me show you. Oh crap, hold on. Okay, still online. So the idea basically is of a property, for those who don't know, is that if you have a class, and let's say you have a, instead of exposing typically something like volume as a public field, right, like you would do in C it would be something like this. Class dingus, struct dingus, and then we will have something like int volume. Right, instead of doing that, what you typically do is you do, well, this is not there, but in C you would do dingus set volume, right, on dingus d in B, and you would also have a dingus, the details. Int dingus get volume. Right? Does that ring a bell? What? What happened? Anyway, that's sort of how it works, right? And you get the idea. So instead of having these things, what would you do in C sharp? The equivalent of doing this, instead of having this thing, is instead of having the public int volume, what you do is you define this as an internal variable, and then you expose a public thing which is called a property. And a property has getter and setter methods. So you do get, and you say return volume. This returns the little guy. And then let's say set, then you set the volume value, right? And then you do something like audio, driver, update, value, volume. Now, the beauty of this thing, the beauty of using the setters and getters is that now your code elsewhere, like this, you have a volume object, or in this case, this thing is called audio. So you have your audio object here. If you have something like this, then you can set d volume plus equal 10, and that changes the volume, right? So those are C# properties. They're basically getter and setter, nice getter and setter methods. They look like variables, but they're actually triggering method invocations. So what we do in what we do with C# is we actually do this exact same thing. So what was my demo? This guy. So for example, let me change this for something more interesting. Entry E. I'm gonna make this an entry. And I can say e.text equals this is the startup value. Oh, look at the idea. Right, so in reality this is gonna call GTK entry set text e blah blah blah. Right? What? Oh right. So you get the idea, right? So we do map getters and setters to this thing. I'll show you something later more interesting than this, but where did the open office go? Okay. We also map signals to events. So that means that the typical signal connecting, we map it to what .NET has this high-level construct. Just like we have properties, .NET has this high-level construct called an event. And an event is basically, it's basically your GTK signal. It's less powerful than a GTK signal because a GTK signal is this universe of its own. It's like a Linux kernel on its own. And so it's not as powerful, but it gets you most of the features there. So what we do is we do map signal emission to this thing. So let's do a bottom, which is probably the simplest thing to do. Bottom B, new button, click me, and the way you hook it up is you just add. You use a syntax which means add to the event. It's not an overloaded method. That's the syntax in C#. New event handler. Click it. So I go here and I do static void click it object sender event args d and say console write line. I go click it. Using system. Right? Wow, I'm such a good partner. So I click on this guy. And it does that thing, right? And you can remove event handlers by using minus equal and the name of the delegate that you're calling. Some other things that we do. Oh, we also have a write the toString methods in C#. Every class derives from the object class, and the object class has the toString method. It's typically a method used for debugging purposes. So the idea is, if you want to render the state of a particular object, the toString method is what you do. And it's invoked implicitly. Let me show you. It's called implicitly every time you do something that is a string operation on an object. So, for example, there's something which is not a string. So it's useful for doing things. It's useful during debugging. So you can do things like, for example, point P, new point 1020. That's kind of a lame demo, as you can say. The value is, right? So I'm printing the P. What was the name? Oh. What? Oh. Right? So it's nice. It actually does these kind of little things for you. Or you can actually. I think color is a much better example. Using system drawing. Oh, that's a good one. Using system drawing. So you do color C equals new. Now what is that? Okay, you don't want to see it. It doesn't really matter. Anyways, and we also have overloaded functions. In some cases, you know how in GTK you have all this, since in C you don't support overloaded methods, you end up with GTK, object name, some action, right? And then some action with args, some action with defaults, some action with defaults and args, right? That sort of thing. With C# you can actually avoid that by just using overloaded methods. So when the action is exactly the same one, what we do is we just have different overloaded methods and we provide the defaults for you. So I cannot think of a good example right now, but oh, like for example, window. When you pass you can pass the window either the window type. Oops. Oh crap. You can either pass the window type or you can pass the name of the window. So for example, in my samples I've been showing you, I've been passing a title to the window, right? But typically GTK window new takes a window type, right? Window type dot top level. So this is just an overloaded method. It's a convenience function for people to use. So we have some of those features. Other than that, there's not a lot more in GTK# beauty-wise at this level. The other things that we have done, there's a couple of areas where we have done some extra work, which leaves the traditional, typical, just wrapper binding. The first one is the auto-connection of variables using attributes, and the auto-connection of event handlers. And this is the demonstration that didn't work last week in Argentina, and it was not my fault. And I'm going to do it again just to prove it that it was not my fault. So basically, you do something like this, and somebody said, can you write a web browser? And I said, of course. And the strategy there was to tell people I had Mozilla bindings, so you keep rubbing this in the face of the audience, so they say, write a web browser. So that's what I did. So we add this guy here, and I'm going to tell you what the problem was with my little demo. Where's the toolbar? Okay. And you stick this guy here. And I had some nice buttons, so the demo was nicer because I had little buttons that said go back and forth, and the demo completely fell on me. And here we're going to insert a Mozilla dingus, so we're going to put a frame here, so just so I remember the name, slave frame one, okay. And what else? We're going to add a signal handler. On entry one activate, okay, just remember that thing. TMP, B.plate, probably other, BB. That's never gonna fail. Okay. I'm gonna show you what happened. So I'm there with a live audience showing how easy it is to write a web browser using Glade and Mono and GTK and all that crap. Well, it turns out that the demo doesn't work. It's not loading the URL. It just doesn't load the URL. I'm tapping URLs, I'm clicking, and it doesn't do anything. You know what it is? You want to know what happened? Well, thank you. What was the name, CC? Or BB? Oh, no, it was CC, guys. Oh, there's a BB directory. Crap. Okay. So it turns out that GTK entries don't send the activate signal by default. Did you know that? You did know that? Okay, so it turns out that you have to come here and click activate default. So there I am doing a demonstration to the Microsoft people, who were the people who paid my trip to Argentina, and there I am doing a demonstration to the Microsoft idiots, and stupid thing doesn't work. So now that we do this little thing, now I can continue with my demo. So Emacs, a.cs, using Glade, using GTK. So why am I doing this demo again? Oh, I remember. Static void main. I'm going to do this. New D, and then in the constructor, I'm going to do application init. This is just because I'm an object-oriented person. And that's why I'm doing it this way. Application run. Probably shouldn't do this, but And now, here's a nice interesting trick. You use this attribute, which is this feature I talked about this morning in the talk, and you use this attribute to apply it to a variable. So I'm going to apply it to the variable frame 1, the variable of type frame 1. So the only difference with a regular definition is, right, that would be a regular definition. The only difference is that I'm adding this little guy here, right, which is an attribute, and I'm basically flagging this variable. I'm adding this little flag. So what I'm going to do now is I'm going to create I'm going to load a glade file, new glade XML. What is the name of the file? vd.glade. Actually, I've never understood the arguments to glade functions. I don't know if anybody has the same issue. And I've never understood why you have to pass the window that you want to hook up. Anyways, then we do GUI auto connect. What else am I going to do there? Oh, widget entry one. And what was the name of the thing? On activate. Does anybody remember what it was? Huh. It was called on entry one activate. What? Oh yeah, I got all the combinations of grep there. Yeah. It's a classic. So of course, and the demo was this. The demo was a GD embed widget W. So we do W is equals to new embed widget, which is Mozilla. So I don't know why you have to pass two arguments, but you pass them. They're in TMP, so they get cleaned up. What else did you do? Oh, yes, you do frame one dot add W, and then frame one show all or something. And W show all. And then we do W load URL file TMP perfect file name. Okay, this is gonna fail because it always fails. Mozilla something? Oh! What is it? The name of the library? Oh crap! Oh, I think it's using GTK Moz Embed. It's a terrible name. I didn't pick it. When I pick names, they're always perfect, as Joe can is a witness of. So I'm just gonna pull the. And this is very Visual Basic. I'm just gonna pull the text out of the entry, and in theory, this should work flawlessly. It always does. GTK Moz Embed Sharp. Hold on. Missing system, and I'm missing Glade Sharp. 27. Oh, this. Oh, okay. Hold on. It always fucking happens. Wait. So what are the arguments to Glade XML? What? Let me check that quickly. Glade. What the fuck is that? Glade XML constructors. So the one I want to use is... Which one do I want to use? Oh crap, it's this one. Okay. File name, root, and domain. Okay, so the first one has to be the file name. Can anybody tell me what is the point of the root argument in Glade? That is interesting. That is very interesting. Okay, that makes sense. Okay, it still doesn't work. I'm there. What? No, I need to have those. Oh, I have to switch them? Whoa, hold on. No, I think that this is the way it has to be. Oh, if this fails again, this is going to be so embarrassing. Crap. It is embarrassing. Oh, this is not possible. Just a minute. CVS, Monadoc, browser. Hold on. I'm just going to do some grepping. Glade, XML. Oh, there it is. Oh, so why do I do that? No, you're right. The second argument must be the window name. I shouldn't do live demos. I should just read from the slides. Where's this test glade? Oh, here it is. Glade test. Please tell me is over. No, test glade. What the hell is going on here? Well, that would work if I had the debugger compiled, but I don't. I use what? Well, I can't because that's for the next demo, guys. I just wonder how I'm gonna get it to work. Can this work today? Hold on. Just discuss among yourselves. I'll be right there. Okay, let me see. What is wrong here? Well, no, because the first... Okay, let me do this thing quickly. What I'm gonna do is I'm gonna do that. Just to see if that's the problem. Oh, crap. Okay, so that's a problem. Oh, crap. I don't know the one. Oh, maybe it is. Window 1 in Glade. No, it's called Window 1, dude. What the fuck did it be? Oh, that makes a little bit of sense. Oh, that was it. Oh, was it? No, it wasn't. I have to what? No, I'm going to tell you why it shouldn't be that way. Because the first argument, if I pass 4 arguments, that means that it's gonna load the Glade file from within itself instead of loading it from the disk. So right now I'm loading from the disk, which is the lame way. And I wanted to show off how nice it was to, but now I'm not showing off anything. You think that would work? At this point, I'm just gonna try everything. So your suggestion? Glade on the file? Okay. Oh, I got the properties, and then? I do what? Come on. No, I'm sure there's something else which is wrong. So last week my problem was a stupid entry and now I don't know how to use my stupid... And also I got all those errors. Hold on, don't despair. I'm getting there. Where do I have another sample? Well, let's just do it the hard way. I'm going to pass null just like the sample said there. And I'm going to blow my little bit of demo. And basically what I'm going to do now is I'm going to link the bb.glade file into it. No, we still get the same. Oh, this one here? This is not possible. XML, CVS, Monadoc, browser. So I use it null, then browser.glade, then the window, and then null. That's exactly what I'm doing. Huh? I don't think that's a... No, because now it's loading it from the assembly itself. Glade is not cooperating today with me. Oh. No, that's not it. Oh, yes. Oh, fuck, it is. Oh, yes. Oh. Oh, that is correct. I was using the variables before I could use them. You see what happened? Okay, let me explain what happened. AutoConnect connects these two guys, frame one and enter one, right? And the AutoConnect was not here, it was here. So I was actually calling frame one.add before. Oh. Okay, so now we're showing now two things. Okay. Okay, so we're showing two things. Hold on. So we're showing two things now. The first one is that it after much fighting, it actually loads glade files. Well, we're showing three things. Two, that when you act as a variable that has not been initialized, you get a null reference exception. And three, which you can catch. And three, Mozilla is embedded in that little frame that is not showing up. Now, Mozilla complained with some error. Let me see, what did it say? It said, ASDF not found. It said, oh, it's not there. Oh, I had to save it. So this is the Miggy browser. What the fuck is my... Did you hide it? No, it's shown, man. Show all. It's shown as a widget can be. I mean, I'm gonna insist on it. I mean, that's not what we wanna show. Oh, yes, that's what we wanna show. I mean, I can insist, but I don't think it's gonna make a difference. Oh, there it is. Okay, now let me fix this. This is just unacceptable. What the fuck is going on? Well, I'm just gonna blame it on GTK because that's what you do. It's some magic something. Let me see. So there's something there. What the hell is going on there? Oh, you know what it might be? That it's not. I don't know what it can be. I'm just gonna undo and leave that ugly hack in there. I don't know what it was, honestly, guys. But I'm gonna blame it on GTK. Okay, there we go. Now, the Miggy browser. Now let's browse something else. File. It can load that? Oh, yes, it does. So, my demo didn't work before at Microsoft because the stupid... Oh, hold on. Yeah. Nope. And I don't know why my applet is gone. My applet is now gone. Okay. So, what was I telling you? Oh, so another interesting thing is, remember, so now we're using a, if you compile this thing, you end up with this little guy, right? Do you see that? If I compile the code standalone, this is the size of the program. Now, with the traditional Unix applications, what happens is that you end up with the PNG files, the glade files, the documentation files, everything is scattered, right? So typically what we have to do with applications is at compilation time, we have to tell the application what is the prefix it's going to be installed on, right? So it can locate the rest of its data files. So you can still do that with C# if you want to, but another option is to embed all of the information into the executable file. So it only gets loaded when you actually require it. So it's kind of like the Macintosh resource works. Well, it's not like that, but basically you can tell the runtime, I want to extract a resource file from within the executable. And the idea with this thing is that you can ship a single executable, which is self-contained. So now I linked with bb.glade, and you can see that now the executable contains, it's much larger because it contains the glade file. So for example, the monodoc program, or mphoto, for example, mphoto, let me do make, it's just that this is I'm working on this thing and I don't want to screw up the working version. But you'll see that this actually links a bunch of things. It links a glade file, it links a PNG file, it loads another PNG file, and it also loads some SQL statements for initializing the database. Right? So again, it's a single executable and everything is self-contained in this program. So that's a little nice feature and I should say that demo keeps on not working. Okay. So we're gonna skip over this thing. Now, there's a few things that you have to keep in mind. I mean, one of the problems that we do have with Mono is that you tend to become very lazy when it comes to memory allocation because you get garbage collection. So we tend to just never care about resources. And when it comes to priming with GTK, you kind of do because you're allocating resources that live on the server. and the garbage collector is not going to release them for you. So you still need to, so for everything in GTK, everything in GTK that needs to be destroyed, we take care of that, right? So everything, every GTK sharp widget, every GTK resource that we manage, we will take care of disposing it. But in some cases, it might be, but there's no way of telling when the runtime is going to dispose it, because it's a non-deterministic garbage collector. So it might be an hour before it decides to dispose the information, right? Or 10 minutes or whatever. So until it doesn't have to, it won't release the information. So in those cases, what you have to do is, when programming GUI applications, you have to release the resources as soon as you can, right? So that means that anytime you allocate a GC on the server, every time you allocate a FixMap on the server, when you're done using it, you should release it. And that also means that if you implement your own widgets, you should implement the idisposable interface, which is a .NET mechanism for releasing things. The language has support for using idisposable objects. So you say things like using an object that needs to be disposed, and then the runtime makes sure that if an exception is thrown, it will release the object at the end of its use. So that's pretty much the only thing you have to keep in mind about this thing. Also, since C# is so fun to work with, you might be tempted to just write your new widgets in C#. I know all of you will start doing that tomorrow. So if you need to interface with legacy C code, right, and you're writing all these new and cool C# code, you can use a tool called the Silk. And Silk basically will take a C# assembly and will generate bindings for the entire C# assembly in C. It's kind of suboptimal. We should be able to have a flag that says just generate bindings for this particular class. And what it does is basically it uses the mono embedding API. So you can have, for example, say, Nautilus. It's just a hint, for example. Nautilus, and let's say you want to use a widget that I produced, so what this generates is a bunch of C code and .h files and .c files that you can call to call into this thing. I've never used it myself because going back to C is just very painful, guys. Once you go this route, you never come back. But I'll show you the output of that thing. Where's the output of that thing? Well, it doesn't matter. Oh, for example, we're going to do something sick. We're going to generate binding for the Mono C# compiler. Yeah, that's going to be massive, I think. Output. I think that's going to be horrible. Oh, it's Mono. I mean, we're perfect. Yeah, so that's kind of a lot. But if you want to invoke, let's say, a C# cast operation, there you go. You use C# set expression, get target type, emit, do resolve. So it generated nice binding for the C# compiler. I don't know if this is any useful, but... What? Oh, crap. You just found a bug. Oh. Stupid demos. Just ignore that. It requires C+. It requires C+ features. It requires C99, obviously. You obviously haven't read the spec, as I haven't. What else? And gconf, I haven't used a lot of gconf, but here's what the documentation says. Again, this was not my talk, this was Mike Kestner's, so I'm just representing him. There's a mechanism like which if you take a gconf schema, that I don't know how you produce one of those beasts, it generates the C, a system that maps every change to the schema into events. So every time you make a change into this thing, it emits the event. So if somebody changes the key, it emits the event, you can hook up to that. And finally, there's a thing Rachel calls property editors, and this is basically something that connects the schema files with a Glade file, right? So you can have the Glade directly make changes to the schema file, or any change into a gconf key reflect directly into the GUI. The only thing you can do, because as I said, I'm not very versed in this thing, show you where's that GTK sharp, I think, sample. I can show you what he did with this. Where's that? Gconf. So you take this schema. I don't understand it. I hope you do. Mr. Parser here probably has verified it by now. That's you. Yeah. What else do you do with this thing? So you run the schema generator, which must be somewhere here. Oh, here it is. Which generates a settings file, right, which is this guy here. And it generates all these things, right? All this event throwing, right? So you register, it looks like an event from the .NET perspective. And the little demo that he has, I've never understood this, and probably Gonzalo can give a better explanation of this, but so this is actually changing a gconf key, and when I change the key, it actually changes the GUI. I don't know, that's what it does. You guys figure it out. I think I can do this, and it actually changes, yeah, so it actually hooks up to the color change notification thing. Let me see, where's the sample? A lot of these tricks, so here it is. So I just use settings of the color change and my event handler, and it hooks up to that. A lot of these things, a lot of the things that we do here is with C# and GTK Sharp and OpenGL and all that stuff, abuses a lot the fact that we can do runtime introspection of the program, like the widget trick that we did, and the fact that we can also introspect exposed methods, public methods, variables, fields, and so on. All of that information is not lost at compile time, it's preserved. Just the final words on the generator. Today what we do is we take C source code, we take the original GTK C code and .h files, we have a parser that goes and parses these files, it recognizes a few patterns in C code, and it recognizes some patterns in the .h files. We need to parse the .c files because some of the properties of widgets are only defined in the C code. We generate an XML API description, and we also take as input a file that says, perform the following edits on the API. So make the following changes. Hide this API, change the parameters, change the name, add extra parameters, and also we have a set of custom extensions so we can augment the API from the C# side. We run through it through this generator, and we generate the C# source code. One interesting thing is that the C# that this parser is not, although it's suited for GTK bindings, it's not suited for everything else. So Mark Crichton actually took this parser and wrote a modified version of this parser for parsing OpenGL bindings. So we've got Glued bindings and we've got OpenGL bindings by changing that guy, which now is a complete different fork. And it generates, again, the same XML API description, and we just reuse everything from that point on in the binding. I tried to run the OpenGL demo, but I think that it's miscompiled my glut.exe because it requires X11. I don't know why it's not a dependency there. So that's not my fault. I don't know why that doesn't have a dependency in X11, but otherwise I will show it to you. As I said, the binding is fairly mature today. We have a few, the generator is fairly mature today because we have used it not only to bind the official GNOME APIs, but we have also had, other people have also done bindings for other APIs. The rule for GTK Sharp is that Mike will only include bindings in GTK Sharp which are part of the GNOME 2 platform. Anything which is not part of the official platform, it's not shipped as part of the GTK Sharp bindings. And that doesn't mean that everything which is part of the platform is shipped. It just means that we're not going to include stuff which is not part of the platform. We have used it in other places. The Mono Debugger actually binds two widgets. One is the tree view, and I forget what the other one is. I think it's the docking widget from one of these development projects in GNOME. It's been used to bind a lot of other stuff. There's even a tutorial from the crazy Spanish hackers that does bindings for Mr. Project. They just use a libmr project as a sample of how to bind an API and how to go from editing your makefile to produce a complete binding to the library. Some applications which are interesting that we've written with GTK Sharp. We're still very pretty much focused on. I mean, most of the Mono team is still pretty much focused on. We're doing C# 2 version, generics in the runtime, web services, and other things. But we still get to do some GTK Sharp hacking. MonoDoc is our documentation system. I showed it in the morning, but I guess most of you were drunk and didn't see it. Who was drunk this morning and didn't come? Oh, there you go. Oh, you didn't. Oh, it's beautiful. MonoDoc is like the best documentation browser in the world. What is interesting about this guy is that this is actually browsing. Right now it's browsing two kinds of different output. One of them is the Mono tutorial that we have written for Mono, which covers installation, use, C# tutorials, Visual Basic tutorials, Gnome.net tutorials, which is the first guy here, this guy here, right? And there's a lot of crap here. Well, a lot of to-dos too, a lot of bugs. But this is basically an HTML document that we ship, and it's part of the Mono tutorial on the Mono website. We also have the class library documentation that comes from Microsoft, and this is a fairly dynamic plugin. This is not using a pre-generated HTML files. These HTML files are generated on the fly from the XML documentation and the assemblies on the disk. So it can actually tell you, for example, this little flag here means that although we have a document that says it has to be documented, well, this actually shows two things. First, it says we don't have documentation to be added, and that's our flag for you have to edit this thing. And then it actually does a lookup on the assembly and notices that we don't have an implementation for this class yet. So this actually means that even if you try to use it, it's not going to be found on Mono. You can see another one here. For example, it says that the class is... It actually means unfinished, not present. It means that we have a flag. We have a flag in Mono, one attribute, just like the ones I showed you that says this API has a missing thing, or we know that there's a bug in this class. So if any method in the class or the class contains a Mono to-do attribute, it will show up this way here. The other interesting thing is that this backend just got rewritten. Originally was something like 4,000 lines of C# code or 3,000 lines of C# code for extracting XML data, right, with the typical XML extracting APIs. And some guy came and rewrote my 3,000 lines of code in 300 lines of XSLT. And so that was nice, with a couple of hooks that call into the assembly thing. I still refuse to learn XSLT, but it was from maintenance point of view, it was like 3,000 lines of code, 300, like 300. So now the problem is that I cannot maintain this thing. I don't know XSLT, so I can't hack on this anymore. But the documentation is at least for everything covered by ECMA, because we just got everything from ECMA. It's pretty complete, with the exception of that class that I picked up for demonstrating. See, very nice, and it's all hyperlinked. Now you'll notice that at the bottom it shows you the kind of a URL there. If Jim Gettys saw me doing this with URLs, he would probably shoot me. I've never understood really how to build a real good URL, so I just put it together myself. Well, apparently he's very religious about how to use URLs and registering the right URL with someone. So,
he's right.
Hmm?
He's right.
Well, some old Web3C people are just like that. All practical people. No, I'm kidding. So now notice the little thing here. I don't know if you noticed the fake URL there. t:\systemappdomain. You can use that if you don't like the beautiful GUI that we have produced. You can use the command line mod tool, and you can say, I want to see the documentation for system decimal. And very nice. You see? I don't see a lot of excitement tonight. That's what I'm talking about. Now, we probably want to see something more like, we want to say namespace system. I can get all the classes in system. That's not very useful. System date time, maybe? Oh, you can now get a list of members. So, for example, we can actually get the documentation for a particular method. Let me see which one. Oh, like this one. So it's kind of annoying that you have to put the quotes, but you can get documentation for all of that from the command line very conveniently. What other things have we written? We wrote mphoto. This was a hack that that I put together on an airplane because Nat just got a Macintosh and he had this wonderful software for browsing pictures. And the idea is, can we write an image viewer which is really fast, threaded, and pulls any kind of trick as long as when I move the scroll bar, the image is updated immediately. I don't want to wait. I don't want to nothing. I don't care what kinds of hacks we have to pull. We have to do that. So the interesting thing about this widget is that it's multi-threaded. It uses EXIF, and I think that's all the nasty tricks it plays. And it does prefetching of images as you are idly sitting. The logic is not very good. Then Vlad came and decided to add a SQL database backend. So you can actually turn it off, and I'm going to turn it off because I've never managed to get SQL running. So again, the interesting thing about this thing is that it was a very little effort. Oh crap. I think that's the program name. Yeah. Okay, it works. So the interesting thing about this thing is that the purpose of this thing is that NAT requirement was that as soon as I scroll, the thing should be almost immediate, right? So I think that we... And then once you load this, it's obviously cached. This is with no thumbnails generated. I deleted the thumbnails before running. Actually, I'm just going to show you that. Let's delete the thumbnail directory. Oh, there it goes. So what was important about this thing is that NAT wanted to have something that was quick to load the images. And we've been pretty good at that. There you can see how it was loading the images. Can you see when it's loading the image? And of course, it plays all kinds of NAT tricks. Well, not all kinds of, but it uses EXIF, which is linked into the application, so it pulls the image from the EXIF image, and it only regenerates the image if required. It uses an old version of EOG. And I don't know why I lost my applet. I don't know where the applet is. Oh. Okay. So it uses EOG. And without the wheel mouse, you can't really do a lot with this. But the interesting thing is that you can do things like, right? It's just EOG. Before they took all of the nice things about EOG out. Now you can't do this with the current EOG. You have to back out like 2 months or 4 months to get it working, which is what I had to do here. What are the little toys we have written with this? Oh, Nginx GTK. Mono has a very extensive regression test suite. And how do I run this thing on Zalo? And we use Nginx, which is this .NET version of JUnit. Open recent assemblies. So this takes a while. We have a lot of tests for all of the API. It takes a little to load. I'll show up a little tree there. And this is the nice thing about this is that it's nicer than the Windows version of Nginx. The Nginx version of Windows is not as good as this one, and Gonzalo put it together in a couple of days. Oh, there it goes. So now you can... I'm not going to run all the tests because they take forever to run, especially everything, all the crypto stuff takes forever, all the security stuff there, but you can run some of the tests. There's some errors there. You can see what the errors are. Oh, I wonder why you picked the bad ones to show. Our integer stuff is pretty good. Pretty good. As long as you're using booleans in mono, you're fine. Globalization, not bad. Let's see what the fuck is going on here. Read decimal. Oh, this is only for bank people. If you care about finance, you care about this, but if not, you're fine. So what was the expected this number? Oh, it's just a sign. It's a little... details. The worst part is Gonzalo told me just pick the system assembly. That one passes completely before running this thing. And it's interesting because there's a lot of people in Mono that either wanted to learn the API or wanted to contribute. And an easy way of learning the API is through brute force regression test writing. And everybody who has bought into the whole extreme programming, or they bought the book, they paid the $60 for the extreme programming book, has been writing tests for Mono. So that is also fascinating. And I think that's the one that takes forever to run. Only one failure. Oh. Oh. Oh, it's only return type when you're generating dynamic assemblies. You didn't care about that. Oh. Return type is null, but it was expecting void. Anyways. Details. What else do we got there? Oh, and my mList hack. I'm very proud of my mList hack for one reason. This is a little widget. It's not a very functional widget. It's just a little hack that I did when I was when I saw the new Outlook screenshots. And it's not complete. It doesn't do anything. The only thing it does, the only thing this widget does, is it does grouping, and it does it with an algorithm I'm very proud of. It's a beautiful algorithm. I cannot understand what it does anymore. But the day I wrote it, I was very proud of it. And it uses Pango, so that's why it's going to spew a lot of error messages. And it took me 5 hours to write, including the decoder for Camel message files, for the encoded summary files. So here it is. Oh, look at that beautiful guy. So the idea is that this thing would actually replace the, instead of being the messages that you see on the top on Evolution, and this is, of course, me wishful thinking, Evolution would use this thing on the right pane, just like the new Outlook version, and instead of having this pane over here, you would have it over there, right? So that's the idea behind this thing. And it was just a quick hack to see if I could write a widget quickly. The widget is on the wiki page, so you can download the source code and see it. I think that the beautiful thing about this widget, and it's not complete, I repeat, but is that the camel reading routines is roughly 200 lines of code. The actual widget is 300 lines of code, and the test program, which hooks up the camel plus the GUI, is 150 lines of code. So I'm very proud of that because it's a little toy, and it's very nice and pretty, and you see, it's all perfect. And Jesus Pango too. What else? If you want to find more about GTK Sharp, that's the URL. As I said, we're using it for more and more applications. There's a couple of companies actually building their internal software with this. One of them is Latitude Geo, so they have their system that monitors their computers using GTK Sharp. Mailing list, wiki, webpage. And we can do questions now. No questions? Yes?
I'm relatively serious about the memory footprint. I like programming in Python. I like that, but I do maintain a very small application, which is the applet in Red Hat. That's the little button. It just uses what Glide and GTK. I don't think we use much of anything from GNOME except connecting to the toolbar. And mm-hmm. at runtime, you just start it at runtime, and it's 20 megabytes of memory.
Wow. It was a moment.
So,
it's not the resident set size. It's not the resident set size. If an application just calls printf from libc, it's going to get 4 megabytes just because the memory map for libc for other applications is also going to be added. That's why you have to consider RSS separate from memory.
Miguel, I did consider both.
Oh, okay.
The problem is
but
that
it wasn't 20 megs of
no,
RSS.
No. The problem is that Python basically dynamically compiled the thing, and that thing is not shared as a result.
Oh, you see
what I mean? You will see where I want to go. So that's the reason why I did ask about the memory footprint when you started the small demo.
Oh, I see. Yes, there is. I mean, we haven't spent a lot of time either in GTK Sharp or in Mono in trying to save a lot of memory. I know the jitter doesn't leak memory as of last week. I mean, the last time we ran Valgrind, we didn't leak memory during the jittering process. That doesn't mean that garbage collection won't screw up or that you keep some resource or allocate something on your own. We're probably going to have still bugs in Mono that need to be fixed at some point, and also GTK Sharp probably could be more efficient, could be tuned for that particular use. I don't think that today we've spent enough time doing that. In GTK Sharp, there's been a couple of audits of the code base, audit for the use of pointers, audits of the use of unsafe. We've performed this as we find errors in the design. We've performed full audits of those components of the software. I don't think we've ever done an audit for memory footprint. It would be a good thing, but I don't think anybody today has done it. Now, about the memory consumption of GDEP code, that should be a non-issue now that we have an ahead-of-time compiler because all of those assemblies can be pre-compiled. So we shouldn't have that thing, but I haven't measured it, and it would be interesting to measure it. I mean, it's not 1.0 quality yet. That's the the end message. Of course, I think evolution should be rewritten using this, but Nat doesn't want me to push for that. No more questions? Yeah. Oh, it's hard. When should they? Well, today you want to use GTK Sharp if you want to use the application mostly on Linux, and you want to use Windows Forms if you want to use it mostly on Windows, and you don't want to run it today on Linux, because Windows Forms doesn't work yet on Linux. We have some things working, windows, some buttons, entries, some drawing things, check boxes, a few things are working, but not everything is working. So if you care about using it today in Unix, you cannot use Windows Forms. Now, I don't have a strong opinion about Windows Forms because I haven't used it, but people who have claimed that it has a number of very annoying limitations. It came to the point that the Sharp develop people said, this is too annoying and too unportable. So what we're going to do is we're going to port Eclipse's SWT toolkit to C Sharp, from Java to C Sharp, and use that for Sharp develop. So Sharp develop just published its last release with Windows Forms, and the next version will be completely SWT based. That's all I can tell you. I really don't have a strong opinion about those two. I think GTK is a lot better toolkit in general than Win32, because it has things like image management, it has things like the accessibility, it has Pango, which is lacking from the Windows API. So in general, when I had to use Windows Form for a quick hack, it felt annoying. And also Windows Forms uses absolute positioning. So the idea is that before you, that every time you internationalize your application, you have to relay out your widgets on the screen yourself and recompile the application. With GTK, everything is more of layout. It's more like constraint-based. Okay, thanks for coming.